Well, welcome back to another episode of the Life in the City podcast. We are recording from a new venue tonight. We are not in a echoey space next to a train station. We are sitting in the Love's living room.
AKA the Love Shack.
I wasn't going to say it.
So I'm happy to say it. The Love Shack.
We are sitting in the Love Shack, which cracks me up. But we're doing that because we are interviewing Joel Love tonight, which is really, really fun.
Happy to be here. Thank you. This does seem fun. Welcome to the living room.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me in. We can do this. So this episode is just one of those where we want to get to know a member of Antioch. And for those of you that don't know Joel, maybe you can feel like you know him a little bit better by the end of this. But because of the various hats you wear, we'll also kind of talk about some other things as a new elder, recent treasurer. I don't know what else.
Other stuff.
Other tasks, yeah. As assigned. We've been talking a lot about being voluntold recently. Then maybe that's...
You volunteered for some things. You might have been voluntold for some things, too.
No. Spiritual gifts were identified.
That's true.
My parents' church have a gifts discernment committee. So they discern people's spiritual gifts and then ask them to exercise them in various roles throughout the church.
Wow.
Which feels like you can't say no to someone discerning your spiritual gifts and telling you how to use them. And so they get a lot of volunteers.
I mean, it's probably effective.
Right.
It's interesting.
Potentially shame-inducing, but, you know.
Maybe. I mean, also, and I'm sure, like, John Wattage and Jenny Hubbard would speak to this, too. But as a spouse of a staff member, you do a lot of things around the church that you definitely don't get paid for. But because you have a spouse on staff, like, if I am stacking chairs, you're stacking chairs with me. Or, you know, things like that just happen. We thank you for that service, too.
I'm going to get you guys a bigger pump for draining the baptismal.
Oh, you
don't want to be there for 6 hours?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's a lesson in patience. But before we get into more Antioch stuff, because I don't even know some things about you, Joel. Mm. So I would love to just tell us about yourself. Sure. Where'd you grow up? Do you have siblings? What'd you study? Just the basics, kind of what do you do for fun?
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah. I grew up in Indianapolis. That's from Indiana.
Oh, you aren't a Minnesotan?
I'm not a Minnesotan. A Hoosier.
We forgive you.
Yeah. I'm a transplant. We've been in Minnesota for 5 years. I have two older brothers and a little sister. So I am kind of a middle child, but kind of a youngest child because they say the gender split kind of matters on that stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm the youngest boy. I went to Calvin College after graduating from Zionsville High School. Studied mechanical engineering, Calvin College in Grand Rapids, Michigan. That was where, we can get into this probably a little bit more later, but I was kind of exposed to some Reformed theology and all of those Calvinistic things that happened at Calvin College. But mostly I was there to learn engineering and hang out with my friends.
I was going to say, was it a surprise given the name of the college?
Or? I didn't know anything. Not sure I even knew who John Calvin was before I went to the school.
You were just looking for like a good engineering program.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You're right. A Christian school with an engineering program, and it was an appropriate distance from home. Not too close and not too far. So I grew up in the Mennonite church. My parents are still at that church in Indianapolis. Went to Calvin College, and then after graduating with my mechanical engineering degree, moved to Pittsburgh. For 7 years, I lived there working for a company that did nuclear power plant design, which was educational. It was experience. It was work. It was not like a ton of fun, but I'm glad to have done it. And then Rachel and I met in 2016.
Good job.
Got married in 2017.
It's all a test.
This is with no notes, people.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what, 2, 3 months, 4 months maybe after getting married, we moved to Minnesota.
Yeah.
From Pittsburgh.
And you moved because of the work you do now?
I moved for the work I do now, which is very different than the work I was doing then.
Yeah. Yes.
So a good friend of mine that I grew up with We had always wanted to start a business together. So he's from Indianapolis as well. He came up here to go to the University of Minnesota for grad school, which is why he was here. And he and I had just basically been toying around with the idea of starting some sort of business for many years. And then he kind of got into hobby hydroponic farming and did that in his basement for about a year, and then said that he thought he could turn it into a business. And I was kind of done doing engineering work. And Rachel was on board to move to Minnesota.
Why not?
So we we packed up and came out here and started a hydroponic farm.
That's awesome.
I like to joke that he went from like nuclear power plants to like growing plants. So it's all plant related for sure.
Very plant centric. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Well, what was that like for you guys to move across the country for a job that you were creating for yourself with no family or natural network aside from this one friend?
Yeah. So it was probably different for Rachel and I.
Maybe.
I had already, Pittsburgh. So Pittsburgh is 6-7 hours away from Indianapolis. So I was already kind of not around my family and hometown all the time. And so moving to Minnesota was further away and made some of the logistics of traveling to family harder. But it wasn't like a huge shift in my own personal day-to-day thought process of how I would interact with my family.
Sure.
Rachel was living 20 minutes away from parents, brothers, nieces, grandparents, aunts. so now being 13, 14 hours away from all of those folks is probably a little bit more of a shift for her. But I think it's been good. Yeah.
It has been good. Yes. I swear we talk about this more than just on a podcast. but also it was a shift too, because when I like to joke that it was like a bait and switch. Like when I met he was working at this nuclear power plant, like, or nuclear facility, and like had this great engineering job and was making good money. And then we got married and he was like, I'm quitting and we're going to go start our own business. And I may not make money for a while. Can we live on your teaching salary?
You're like, I don't know. Can we?
Can we? Yeah.
I said, I'm frugal. I think I can make it work.
You are very frugal. literally last night we spent an hour, or you spent almost an hour, researching socks online that you wanted to buy. And you were very displeased on the prices of socks. So this is how often he actually spends money on himself.
I don't do a lot of clothes shopping.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's gone up this last year and a half or so. Yeah. It's painful if you haven't been out there in a while.
Right.
But all that to say, it was a leap of faith in our first year of marriage of we're going to move to a place where we don't really know many people and our financial situation is going to look a whole lot different, and we're going to have to trust God to go before us. And he did.
He did.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's awesome. So, because you said that, you just said, we have to trust God to go before us. And you said you grew up Mennonite.
Yeah.
So talk about that a little bit. Like what, for those who, for the uninitiated, what is a Mennonite? And when did you stop wearing the little caps and things?
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
His name was Jedediah before this.
Right, right. So Mennonites are Christians.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Let's start there.
Yeah. So historically, they came out of the Reformation, right? There's sort of the Calvinists and the Lutherans and the Anabaptists. So Mennonites are in the Anabaptist tradition. I think the Mennonites oftentimes get associated with the Amish because there are some historical roots there that overlap. But most Mennonites look a lot like everyone else.
Mennonites, they're just like us.
Right, exactly. So growing up Mennonite didn't feel particularly odd. Like I fit in at school. People didn't think I was a weirdo. Well, you they did.
not but for not that reason,
because
though.
Because I was a Mennonite.
That was totally unrelated.
But I think there's an emphasis on kind of living simply, thus the frugality. Certainly a heavy emphasis on nonviolence and peacemaking, trying to follow Jesus' teaching to love your enemies and bless those who persecute you. So there's sort of a heavy teaching focus on that. It's a Protestant denomination.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so having grown up, you would say like you heard the gospel from an early age? You heard
it depends when you would have asked me that question.
Okay.
I've heard people explain Oftentimes, lots of people will, after coming to faith and having grown up in a church environment and then coming to faith, or at least a more genuine rooted faith later in life, they will kind of complain, nobody ever preached the gospel to me in my home church. Like, what were they doing?
Yeah.
And that was definitely me in my 20s. I was kind of whiny about, like, why wasn't my church teaching me the gospel? If you go back there today, you'll sit in the service, you'll be like, oh, they are teaching the gospel. I couldn't hear it. Or for some reason, the Holy Spirit had not yet opened my ears and eyes to be able to accept it. With that said, I did understand the gospel. And I was baptized at the age of 16 in the Mennonite church, kind of confessing my sin and that Jesus is Lord and accepting his forgiveness. But I probably, what I think I felt later in life was that my sin wasn't, well, it wasn't evident to me. And so probably that was actually the foundation. Because I didn't actually see my own sin, I wasn't actually hearing the message of forgiveness and reconciliation. I just knew that this was the thing that you kind of did when it came down to the heaven-hell problem.
Right. Like a fire insurance kind of thing.
Yeah, we probably wouldn't have called it fire insurance, but it did kind of feel like there's this eternal destiny choice, and you know, you got to be with Jesus to go to the good one. And so that was a decision that I had made without fully probably processing and internalizing it.
Sure. Well, and I think for those of us that did grow up in the church, it's not fair, and you're not doing this, I'm not saying that, but like, it's tempting to judge our past way of thinking or our past perspectives with our current knowledge and our current experiences, and that's just not fair.
Right.
You know, so did 16-year-old Joel understand the gospel as he understood it? Yeah, probably.
Right.
Now you're like, oh, wow, I knew nothing.
Yeah,
And 20 years from now, you're going to look back at yourself as a new dad and a new elder and be like, who let this man lead anything?
Right.
You know? But that's not the point. The point is, in the moment, am I giving everything I know of myself to everything I know of Jesus?
Right. And I think that's probably the problem, is that I didn't know anything of myself. Right, and 16-year-olds don't.
Yeah,
that's kind of the whole process of teenage years, is figuring all that out. So
totally. So then, so you said you were kind of whiny in your 20s.
Yeah, certainly.
Like, which I think happens to a lot of us in college. But then, as you kind of became a real adult, I know post 18 is technically adulting, but not really.
Didn't feel like it.
How has your faith matured, evolved? What does following Jesus look like now? That's maybe different from when you were in college.
Yeah. So I think in college, I actually remember explicitly thinking or wondering or questioning why I actually needed Jesus. Like, I felt like I kind of had stuff under control and I was cruising along just fine. And I actually wasn't that bad. And so, like, I guess I needed him in order to get into heaven, but I wasn't quite sure I understood why I needed him daily.
On the day-to-day kind of thing. It's like, I need him in eternity, but why do I need him now?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And then a great learning experience to experience your own depravity is to graduate college and move to a new city where you don't know anybody. You have total anonymity, total independence, and no community. And you just get to kind of make it all up for yourself. And that's a recipe for disaster. And so I think I very quickly came to see that me left to my own devices, was a life of misery because I was, desperately wicked. And made horrible choices, and was soon very miserable and very lonely and had nowhere to turn except back to Jesus and to the church.
Right.
And so that's where I sort of got more rooted in a local church, that taught me, probably a more reformed, explanation of the gospel. And what the reformed tradition does great is explain things very clearly and almost like formulaically. They're not actually formulas, but it worked really well for my brain.
Sure.
I'm an engineer. I like thinking analytically and formulaically. And so kind of understanding how deep my sin was and how much deeper God's love for me was and how that would kind of, that kindness and that love is what would transform my life, as opposed to kind of understanding the right things and then trying to live them. was probably a transforming time in my early 20s. And I think since then, my recognition of my own need tends to be how I grow in Christ. Mm. Like every day, it seems like I realize more and more how pathetic I am, in a sense, and needy, I guess. Like apart from Him, I make horrible decisions, and I lead badly. I interact with people badly, and so I think my own misery is oftentimes the signpost that, like, mm-hmm. I think I may have drifted away from the source of life here, which is Jesus. And so I think the continual realization of how much I need Him is probably how I grow.
Yeah, that's such a great reminder, I think, for all of us, that it's not like a one and done. It's not an arrival. Mm-hmm. It's not that even to realize that I need Him isn't great. I've realized that. Next,
not going to level up. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to need Him more tomorrow.
Yeah. And as soon as I think I don't, it's when I need Him the most.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you see then what you, you've done a lot of things for work, a variety of jobs, and now working in hydroponics. Do you call it hydroponics or aquaponics?
Hydroponics. Okay. Aquaponics has fish. We killed too many fish, and so we stopped using the fish.
For real? That's what happened?
We started on a large scale. Really tiny scale aquaponics and murdered all the fish. So
goldfish.
Easier just to dissolve the fertilizer into the water.
Goldfish stuck in like tubes.
It was it was gruesome. Yeah. Like got sucked into pumps and stuff. Yeah.
If you think of like in Finding Nemo, like the scene where the fish are trying to like knock it. Yeah, that happened to some fish.
Hey, entrepreneurs, a lot of trial and error.
Right.
Okay, so you do hydroponics.
Sorry if you're listening, PETA.
Don't come for us. We're urbanized in Edina, Minnesota.
Oh, hilarious. That's
throw your competitors under the bus. Okay.
Oh, that's funny.
Man.
Okay, so then, but how do you see, whether it's what you're doing now or what you've done at any point, how do you see your work as like an expression of your faith or as a way of living out the gospel or bringing Christ to the world? You could think of it in a lot of different ways. That's a lot of different aspects of asking kind of the same question.
Yeah. Yeah. So our community group recently did kind of a work discussion series. Mm-hmm. And we framed it in kind of two categories that I found really helpful. Which was that we were given a creation mandate or a cultural mandate in Genesis 2, 1 and 2, might be in both of those chapters, to cultivate the earth, to draw value out of it, to make things that are good and serve other people. And then there's also what we had called it a recreation mandate, which was in light of the resurrection and God making all things new. How do we engage with our world to set things right? And how do we serve people to address their needs, whether those are physical or spiritual or relational or psychological? And so if I think about those kind of two broad categories, how does hydroponic farming fit into them? I'll admit, sometimes it's hard to see how it does. The creation mandate feels pretty obvious because, you know, it started in a garden and I'm essentially gardening.
Right.
And so growing plants that people eat, those are called vegetables.
Mm. Right. Yeah. Right. Thank you. We'll put that in the show notes.
Yes. Thank you. Right. The link to Wikipedia, vegetables. You know, being able to grow excellent quality food for my neighbors is sort of, I think, part of what humanity was always intended to do. Take this world and draw goodness out of it and give it to other people. So I think it certainly, it does that. And it's good for me to remember that the work is good just because that is what it is. We're growing food for our neighbors. That's great. On the kind of the recreation mandate side of things, I see it probably a couple different ways. One, something that really motivated me to want to start a business is that it creates opportunities to interact with a bunch of different kinds of people than maybe you normally would, whether that's our customers or our vendors, the UPS delivery driver that comes by once a week to drop off our pest control things. But primarily it's our staff. So the team that we are building, those are the opportunities for real relationship, especially with a business of 6-7 people. It's not hard to kind of have more personal interactions, with folks. And so getting to know them and what's going on in their life and what's hard and, where a business can support them, and a business can't support them in every way that they have needs, but it can support them in some ways, especially as, people have needs with their families and, you know, we provide a living for people's families.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, even just by nature of providing employment is huge.
Right. Yeah. And then on the actual growing side, something that's really important to us is that we grow pesticide-free, herbicide-free. Mm. When we're talking about setting wrong things right, the pesticide and herbicide business has set a lot of things wrong. And some of that stuff is pretty dangerous, and I don't know if I'd recommend eating a whole bunch of things with pesticides and herbicides. Now, I do eat some things with pesticides and herbicides, so I'm not like a anti-modern science kind of guy, because they do solve a lot of problems. But I don't think they need to be used all the time, and so we are trying to grow without them in an effort to provide something safe and clean and healthy for our neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool. So you guys moved here, you said 5 years ago?
Yeah.
And you found Antioch pretty quick, somewhat quickly, maybe?
Yeah, probably in the first 6 months, six months. Yeah.
So how did that happen? I mean, you... kind of sounds like, you know, when you moved to Pittsburgh, you already had one experience of like a new city, time to recreate yourself.
Right.
But you were single then, and you know, you really didn't know anybody.
Failed
this
hard.
Time,
yeah,
you move as a unit, and you have jobs already, and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
well, sort of. Yeah. So what was that like? Rachel and I have talked about this a little bit on other podcasts and just in conversation, but. Talk about like finding a church home, why Antioch? And I don't mean this as like just a pat on the back, but what drew you?
Yeah,
to,
well, it's not all
Antioch.
Pats on the back.
I am going to point out that you both right now, both Coley and Joel are wearing Antioch hoodies right now. So very much.
We are repping.
Branded. Repping Antioch tonight.
Yeah.
If anyone drives by and actually looks in this window, it probably is very confusing.
How did we find Antioch? So we found Antioch on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
When you search churches in Minneapolis,
John will be very happy to hear
that. It's got great
SEO. Yes.
So it's right at the top of that list.
John Wadaja does great things for our website that helps people find our church, for
he does.
Sure.
Thank you very much, John. it was one of probably a handful of churches that we visited in those first several months.
And we were the best one.
Yeah, you were the best one eventually.
Oh, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. There's so many good churches in Minneapolis.
The story of the first time we came, though, was a little underwhelming. I think it was... what was going on that Sunday? Something was going on.
Antioch was commissioning a member of their church to go out and start a new church plant in a different state.
Yes.
And so it was probably just a little somber that day.
That's
that Antioch,
right.
Because
someone
there was
was
like a gospel goodbye happening that day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. So someone was, you guys were sending out David Morse. Was that his name?
Yeah.
And no one talked to us. That's just basically what happened.
Oh no.
Which is so strange looking back now on that.
Totally fluky. What we did love is that we heard the gospel clearly proclaimed. That morning, and we're like, well, that's really great.
Very high J count.
Right. Jesus was right at the center of that service. And so we were like, that was pretty encouraging, but I don't know if no one's going to talk to us. Can we really go to this church?
Oh, man.
So we then proceeded to visit other churches.
Sure.
We ended up going somewhere for a few months. And then kind of probably what we experienced at Antioch with the gospel centeredness of it, we were missing in some of the other churches that we were visiting, at least in a way that we needed at the time. And so we decided, well, maybe we should at least go back and give Antioch another shot, because we know at least the gospel will be taught there in a way that's helpful. So we did, and I think Rachel had been praying that morning that if this was the church for us, maybe somebody could talk to us.
that would help.
See if you could, you know, make that happen, God.
Oh, my word.
And so we were still meeting at the Ukrainian Event Center, and we pulled into the parking lot, and we stepped out of our car, and immediately somebody yelled across the parking lot, "Hey, Pennsylvania," because we still had Pennsylvania plates on our car.
Oh, nice.
And it was Dan Moose, who...
So it wasn't, "Hey, Pennsylvania," it was, "Hey, Pennsylvania!"
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. So Dan, with his Western Pennsylvania ties, was excited to see our Pennsylvania plates. And so we talked to the Mooses as we walked into the building. And then we were greeted by a very friendly hospitality team. I think we talked to you, Coley. I think we talked to probably 5 to 10 other people that morning.
We were moving into a new apartment that week. And I remember multiple people were like, when we mentioned that we were moving into a new apartment, they're like, "Do you need help moving? We can help you move." And I was like, "I just met you. Right. You're very nice, though."
Yeah. And also, we don't have any stuff, so we're probably okay. But thank you for that very kind offer.
Yeah.
So it definitely felt like an answer to prayer.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
And again, we like Andy's preaching that Sunday morning was right on point, like it always was, with Jesus right at the center of it. So that wasn't the fluke, but the friendliness, the weird situation that we walked into the first time was abnormal.
You know, I'm always, so funny. Rachel, I don't think you've ever told, when you talk about your first Sunday at Antioch, you tell the Moose story.
Probably the Moose story, yeah, that's true. See, that feels like my first true, Antioch experience.
Yeah.
I tell it like it is.
Yeah, no, this is so good to hear, because I actually have that thought. You know, because in the life of a church, you have weird Sundays.
Yeah, for sure.
There's
yeah.
great Sundays where it's right. like baptisms and, "Oh, this is the best day ever. Let's, you know, hi, new people, fun, yay." And then there's days where it's like, "Oh, we just had to announce something really hard."
Right.
Or something sad, or we're leaving, someone's leaving, or, you know, there's grief to announce or something. Like, and on those Sundays, I'm always like, "Who's new? Who's new? Who's new?"
Yeah.
And I usually end up saying, "I'm sorry, this is not normally..." We're kind of a downer today, but please come back.
But I think that first experience and knowing that, you know, having a welcoming church to walk into and how much that does have an impact on people did, I think, have an impact on us into when we started serving at Antioch, where we wanted to serve.
Yeah, because you guys started serving as greeters. That was kind of your first avenue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think that's right.
Ministry, so to speak, on Sunday mornings. And eventually you led that team for a while, and now you're now you're on it.
Yeah. Now I just stand at the door and smile and try to make sure that nobody gets through without being talked to.
There you go.
Yeah.
and then recently some roles have changed. I mean, Rachel came on staff a couple years ago, which has been awesome. We're a big fan of you bringing her. Thank you.
Happy to help.
And then thank you for following God's call to hydroponics. And whatever happens with that, you can't go anywhere because we need Rachel.
I think it was mostly to bring Rachel to Antioch. The hydroponics thing was just a side tangent.
Hey,
thank God brought us here for Antioch.
I'd buy it.
Fine with it. Yeah.
I'm not mad. But now you've recently taken on a number of other roles that we've sort of mentioned already. But you are now the treasurer on the finance team.
I am.
And you are our newest elder on the elder team. Talk about those roles a little bit. What you definitely were not voluntold for those. Those were choices of your own volition.
Yes.
But what made you say yes to those roles, and what makes you, there's a lot of ways I could imagine answering the what makes you apprehensive about those things, but what makes you excited about those roles, or what makes you want to do those?
Yeah, so I started as the treasurer first by a few months. So I'd been on the finance team at Antioch for a few years. I was actually the treasurer and bookkeeper at our church in Pennsylvania. So I think I had been chatting with Ryan Schreck, who was the treasurer a while back, about that. And he said, "Oh, you should be on the finance team." I was like, that seems like a reasonable place to serve. So I'd been doing that for a while. There had been some transition on the finance team. And I guess it was this summer, as Matt and Andy announced that they were transitioning out, and Nate Crampy, who was the treasurer and an elder, was suddenly very, very heavily loaded. Yeah. The elder team had a lot of work to do. So they were really busy. And I was just asking as a member of the finance team, hey, Nate, how can we help? What do you need? You know, it had sort of been in the back of my mind, like maybe Nate needs to actually be able to focus and step out of the treasurer role. But I didn't say that to Nate. but I had sent an email to him saying, how can we help? And he responded in about a day saying like, hey, you want to be treasurer?
I was like, okay.
All right. Sure. Yeah. So, I do love finances. I love spreadsheets a lot. I basically run my entire business on spreadsheets. They're just so fun. They're so powerful. They're amazing. I would love to do a spreadsheets class at Antioch. Do we do that? We do a spreadsheets class?
I don't know if that's a course we'll be offering.
Your spiritual gifts is Excel.
Yes.
How you can excel in the gospel might be a class.
It hurts. Wow, it hurts me so much.
That is terrible.
Oh, no. That is not what it's going to be called.
So with the treasurer role, I wanted basically to help however I could, especially in this time of leadership transition.
Yeah.
And that seemed like a natural fit for my experience and some of my giftings. What excites me about the treasurer role is that, one, it's not, I don't know that people get excited about finances. I think I'm a little bit unique there. I know there's probably people listening that also get excited about finances, and that's wonderful.
And if so, you should talk to Joel about joining finance team.
That's right. The finance team is the place for you. But I think being able to communicate how our finances are a tool for advancing God's kingdom is a real opportunity. And it kind of fits with some of my giftings around teaching and discernment, hopefully being able to explain some things that engage people in a way that maybe they hadn't heard it explained before.
And I'll say, I thought you did a great job of that at your first kind of stepping into that type of a role with the budget meeting a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. We were homesick, but Rachel was kind enough to stream it. And so we were able to watch that way. And I thought it was great. Just the way you reminded everyone of like, okay, if you don't know, here's the baseline. Like, here's what church finances are. And it occurred to me that I was like, oh yeah, there's probably members that aren't starting with that base.
Yeah.
Not from any fault of their own. It's just
sure.
Sometimes you just assume things and then they never get said, you know?
Yeah.
But then I just thought the way you presented it was really, really great. And you could tell that you actually do find this fun.
I do.
And you do enjoy
it's true.
It wasn't just a face you were putting on, you know.
Yeah, I think, I mean, finances oftentimes, you know, money is the root of all kinds of evil. And so, or the love of money is the root of all
the
kinds
of
evil.
The love of money, yes.
And so, but what I said, what I misspoke that first time is what we've often been taught is that money is evil.
Right.
And so money at churches is sort of a necessary evil. Like, of course, we have to pay for stuff. But like, we don't want to talk about money too much. And we certainly don't want to kind of guilt and shame people into giving us their money. And so sometimes it just kind of becomes a hush-hush topic.
Yeah.
These are God's resources.
Yes. And we have seen, unfortunately, like in our society, some churches and prosperity gospel that has taken that to extremes and has really diluted like the waters. But just because some people don't handle it well or allow like sinful selfishness to get involved with finances doesn't mean that that's what church finances in general are. Yeah.
Yeah. I really like viewing the money that the church has as the opportunities that God has given us.
Mm-hmm.
This is how he is. So I like to say, right, if you catch me saying it, you got to call me on it. I don't like to say that God has given us this money to use. I like to say he has entrusted this money to us.
Mm.
It's a little bit more of like an investment mindset where he has invested this money in us that we go out and put it to use and have a return. right. which is a little bit of a businessy way of understanding it, but it also aligns with some parables that Jesus taught.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like the parable of the talents.
That's right, yeah. and so when we look at our finances and our budget, hopefully we can look at a piece of paper and see what God is kind of handing to us so that we can do his work.
So if the goal is to be, and thankfully we're sitting in a situation right now where we aren't trying to recover from, you know, severe unfaithfulness with our finances
right.
or something like that.
Right.
We were kind of in a tight spot, but so sure. was everybody yeah. during the COVID years.
Yep.
And now we're okay. You know, we're okay.
We're sustainable.
We're sustainable. We're not closing any time soon. But if our finances are maybe the representation or like how we live out our vision, what would you want to see like a year from now in the finances that would tell you we are more aligned with our vision than we were a year ago?
That is an interesting question. I'm not sure that I would be able to see it in the finances. I would hope to see it in the fruit of the body.
Sure.
I would hope to see changed lives, people growing deeper in their relationship with Christ. Mm-hmm. And I would hope that there would be at least some discernible connection between what we invested our finances in and how that discipleship happened.
Sure.
And if there aren't that connection, then we need to evaluate why we're spending our money on those things. And maybe try to identify what it is that caused that helped these people grow and pour more fuel on that fire.
Okay.
Rather than, you know, burning the dollar bills themselves.
Sure. Yeah. So to say like, wow, we put a lot of money into this kind of training or this kind yeah. of opportunity or this kind of ministry, like, and look at the fruit that came out of that.
Yeah.
Let's lean into that more.
Yeah.
Sure.
That makes How sense. We assess that, I think, is a little bit of a mystery.
More of an art, maybe, than a
yeah,
science.
Right. Yeah. But I think that's the work of leadership.
Right.
And eldership is very different for, like, as far as, like, a calling. You talked a little bit about, like, your giftings and how you kind of came into the role as treasurer. But what did that look like as far as becoming an elder? How did that process start? Why does being an elder excite you?
Yeah, it is definitely very different and probably more stretching for me because it's not quite in my kind of wheelhouse of natural skill sets. And I think it is in my spiritual giftings, but maybe not quite so much in my experiences.
Mm.
So it's definitely an area of growth. So I think it probably again started with kind of a desire to make myself as useful as possible. I wanted to serve. I saw that our congregation had needs.
And you'd already been serving as a community group leader.
Right.
Too.
So I'd already yeah. been leading our community group for about 3 years, which is honestly kind of like an under shepherd in mm-hmm. in our congregation. And so there is that shepherding and kind of pastoral care aspect to community group leadership. And so again, our community group had done some work on spiritual gifts and identifying those and people encouraging others in the group and how they might use them within the body. And it had sort of been suggested that leadership and discerning and wisdom were kind of where I landed. And so it did seem like eldership was kind of a natural fit for some of those, while also being maybe an unnatural fit for my experiences.
Hmm.
And so it did feel a little bit, I guess, not outright nervous, but sort of, you know, probably some level of inadequate, honestly.
Hmm.
But the elders asked if I would consider it, so I did. And it did seem like there was enough alignment there between my gifts and their needs and my kind of love for this congregation, basically,
mm-hmm.
That it was a way that I was willing to serve. So what excites me about it is, so I think the job of an elder is a couple of things. It's to teach our body the word of God. to discern where the Holy Spirit is leading our congregation, and then to chase after that in a way that draws other people with me, which is leadership. Mm. And so, I mean, already I've been an elder for, I don't know, a month and a half, 2 months.
Something like that.
And I will say it has driven me to prayer like nothing in my life. I feel like I'm just praying all the time because I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, I'm trying to figure it out, and I'm trying to do it wisely with love as the motivation. But I think we all know that love is not always our motivation when we do things. And so I feel, again, very needy and very dependent. But I do love this congregation. I do love the people here, and I want to see them grow in Christ, and I want to see them excited about his mission and the work that he's doing in this world of redeeming creation and redeeming fallen people. And so I hope to lead us towards that. Hmm.
So with that love for the body, obviously you've mentioned the ways that you serve the body at Antioch, but you're also a part of that body. How do you feel like you are ministered to or served by the body at Antioch as well?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a question I want to ask everybody at Antioch. What are the ways that we are most cared for by our congregation? For me, I mean, our community group comes right to mind. Like, that is kind of the context that I am deeply known and cared for and challenged and encouraged.
Sorry.
Yeah.
What? I love that you said I feel challenged, because it's good, because for those of us that know Joel, he is the challenger. I'm pretty sure on the Enneagram, like, it literally says the challenger. But like you've mentioned to me before, like, having a context in which people can challenge you back in love and against the truth of the gospel is so good. And I know that's been so encouraging to you.
Yeah, it's definitely probably one of the primary ways that I grow is kind of being called on stuff and challenged to rethink and honestly crucify the flesh and pursue the Spirit. So yes, I do like to be challenged. And I think that happens in our community group, and I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah. Well, and I will just say too, like, I appreciate that about you, because it's quite common to have someone who is not afraid to challenge but can't handle being challenged. So to be able to take what you can dish, so to speak, is like very, very healthy and appreciated. Otherwise, because to only have one side of the coin is
annoying at the very least. I wasn't going to say it. And destructive at
worst. Yes. Yeah.
I was helpful. You mentioned the budget meeting, Coley. I joked with Joel a little bit before of like, should I put plants in the audience? Sorry, plants. Should I plant people in the audience to like be annoying and ask a lot of questions? Because historically, even before Joel was on the fight, I'm pretty sure even before we were members, we attended a finance team meeting just to learn.
I remember that.
And like, we sat in the front row.
They said non-members could come.
Yep. That and you asked them questions you that are probably up. Super annoying to Ryan Schreck, our treasurer at that time. And historically since, I think because you love finances and are passionate about how churches steward our finances, like, you do ask a lot of questions that could come across as annoying sometimes to treasurers, but they're good. And so I was like, oh man, at this last budget meeting, like, now's his chance, like, his turn, like, people are gonna ask
the congregation questions. Did not hold back.
They didn't. And I thought that was really great, though. They let me have
the questions, and I was very appreciative
of as that. A family, we can challenge and we can ask questions.
Absolutely.
I thought that was good.
And for sure. Now I'm thinking harder about certain parts of the budget that I had not thought about quite as hard, because people ask questions that I was like, oh yeah, we should have thought about more of the implications on how that's going to play itself out. And so there's already more work to be done. I appreciate it.
That's cool, though. I love that. And I think you said this during the budget meeting. It's like, no budget is going to be perfect in like the comprehensive sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, every year you do one now, you're going to tweak and solve those problems and inevitably create new ones. And, you know, so yeah, being an elder, having led you to prayer because you don't know what you're doing. and coming in as an elder right now is interesting. because we are pastorless. We have Pastor Darius. So that's not fair. We aren't pastorless because all the elders are pastors, that's really, right. in a sense. But
they're interchangeable words, I believe.
Exactly. In the Greek. But
I don't know how to speak Greek for the record.
It's fine. Just English is enough. Complicated enough. But you're coming in at a busy point, at a high stress, high need, a lot of expectations going on for the elders. Mm-hmm. So what would you, if you could sit down with every single member of Antioch or attendee, what would you want to tell them? Mm-hmm. What would you want to ask of them?
Mm. I think I would want to remind our body that we, I think it was Luther or Calvin, one of these reformer guys, coined the phrase, the priesthood of all believers. Mm-hmm. This comes out of, I think, 1 Peter 2. We are a chosen nation, a royal priesthood. We don't have priests. Jesus is our high priest, and we are all priests in the church, meaning that we mediate the gospel to the world and to each other. And so we are not without that. We still have that. We are all that. And so we all continue to do the work of the gospel, both within the body of Antioch and out in the world. With that said, I do think leadership is important. I think that question that you asked me earlier, Rachel, is the question that I would ask everyone is like, how are you most cared for and what do you need, from the people who have been tasked with shepherding and caring for you? I think I would want to give that encouragement that we aren't. There is a little bit of a period of waiting that we're in, but we're not passively waiting. Mm. We are still doing God's work and pursuing his mission and preaching his gospel to his world, to draw his people to him. So I would want to kind of spur us on a little bit, you know, let's keep at it. Let's keep doing it.
Hmm. Sounds like a good word.
Yeah.
I think Rachel and I were just talking this afternoon about how sometimes because we kind of decided maybe it's because we are in every conversation that happens just about in the church, that we feel like we're talking about this transition time all the time. You know, oh, hey, while we don't have a lead pastor, or while we're in this season of transition, or in this season of change, or well, whatever it is. But I think we partially realize that we're hearing it exponentially more because we are on staff and in all of those conversations. Whereas maybe the average person only talks about it or hears it just briefly mentioned on a Sunday morning, you know, in passing. And maybe it comes up in community group, like if there's something relevant that's been talked about that week. But I do think you're right that in this coming season, that it's not just like a put on the brakes and wait until we have a leader again. Like there's a lot to do and there's a lot of people that need Jesus that we can reach in the meantime.
Yeah. And I mean, I say this to people all the time, like Antioch is not just the organization Antioch or just the staff. Like I is Antioch. You is Antioch. We all are Antioch, right?
Mm-hmm. Are those our new shirts?
I is Antioch.
I is not English teacher.
But I mean, mostly because it's like the church body is not just a pastor. Yeah. We all are members of the body. And I mean, I think Paul even puts it as talking about like, you know, the eye can't say to the toe, like you're not as important. We are all members that can serve and love one another. And like you said, Joel, draw others in to the beauty of the gospel. And even though the phrase season of transition might be as grating on me now as unprecedented times was in 2020, it is good to acknowledge that it is a different time. Mm-hmm. But even as we do look forward to the good that God has in store with a new lead shepherd, we can still be about that good work together right now.
I have told many people, this might be part of the reason why they asked me to be an elder. I don't know. Maybe. I love change. Mm-hmm. I'm one of these weirdos that love change. I think seasons of transition are refining. They help us focus and clarify where we're going and why we're going there. And so it's not like we were dead or dying or stagnated or anything. But a transition gives us this opportunity to kind of laser focus back in on where we're headed. And so that gets me pumped up. Totally. And I don't know if it does for everybody, but.
Yeah. And I don't think you have to apologize for that, because I think it actually helps the people that are maybe more reticent to say, oh no, you're right. Okay. Okay. There are good things. Like there's reasons to have hope here, or there's, yeah. You know, no, that's awesome. Well, thank you guys for letting me come over and crash your evening. And thank you, Joel, for giving of an hour of extemporaneous speaking. You did great for an introvert.
Oh, this wonderful. Was fine. Yes. Thank you. I'm going to go curl up and go to bed.
Yeah.
No, you still have to tell me about all your emotions tonight.
Ah, can we save
what's
it
your
for
feeling?
Tomorrow?
Yeah. Okay, possibly.
Oh, my word. Well, before we go, I just want to remind people of a couple of things. I am still looking for recordings from children retelling the Christmas story. So if they're older and can read, let's get recordings of them reading Luke chapter 2 or the Christmas story from one of their children's Bibles, Jesus Storybook Bible, board book. I don't care. If they're younger, ask questions like, hey, what did the angels sing? Or who saw the angels? Or who was in the manger with baby Jesus? And what did those animals sound like? Or that kind of thing. Whatever it is, get a recording of your kids doing that and send it to me, coley@antiochcommunity.org, or email it to me, or text it to me, I mean. And we are going to make a super cut of kids telling the Christmas story, and we'll put that on the podcast and make sure that the whole church can hear it in one way or another. I think that's it for announcements. Other than that,
yeah.
Thank you again, Zakar, a.k.a. Ryan Maurer, for the music, and we'll see you next time.
Have a great week, Antioch.